The following preview is of a graphic audio production rated for mature audiences due to scenes of intense violence and sexual situations.
Graphic Audio presents DC Comics Justice League of America, Wonder Woman, Mythos.
When Hermione and Chloe read to you out of the ancient text, daughter, did they ever read you a story about an island of men?
You really think there is an island of warriors in this ocean?
Oracle?
Batman, something big just came up. I mean that literally. An island just popped up out of nowhere.
Magic. I hate magic.
Tonight, we set sail for Themyscira, where our weapons will taste blood.
Superman, you are possessed by Ares.
You ruined everything.
Who the hell died and made you queen, huh?
Come, Diana, puppet of Ares. One of us must die now.
I'm sorry, Mother.
Kill her!
No!
Now, the world will burn.
Copyright 2009, DC Comics, all rights reserved. Justice League of America, Wonder Woman, and all related names, characters, and elements are trademarks of DC Comics.
Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind.
Graphic Audio proudly presents William W. Johnstone's Smoke Jensen, The Mountain Man, Number One, The Last Mountain. Narrated by Mort Shelby. With performances by James Lewis, Sherry Simpson, David Coyne, Dylan Lynch, Thomas Penny, Tim Getman, James Konacek, Jason Stiles, Christopher Graybill, Jonathan Watkins, Richard Rowan, Ken Jackson, Stephen Carpenter, Nanette Savard, and Johan Detweiler. He was 16 when his father returned from that bloody insurrection known to the North as the Civil War. A war between the states to those who wore the gray. Kirby Jensen was almost a man grown at 16, for he had worked the farm during his father's absence, taking over all the work when his mother fell ill and was confined to bed. And it had been backbreaking work, attempting to scratch a living out of the rocky Ozark mountain earth of southwestern Missouri. There never was enough food. The boy was thin, but he was rawhide tough, for the work had hardened his muscles and the pure act of survival had sharpened his mind. His hands were large and calloused from using an axe, handling trace chains on the mule team, manhandling rocks from the rolling acres of land he, and he alone, had farmed since age 12. It was June 1865. The war had been over and done for better than 2 months. If his father was coming home, he should be along any time now. If he was coming home. Kirby wondered what his pa would say when he learned his daughter had run off with a peddler. He wondered if his pa knew his oldest boy was dead. And he wondered what his pa's reaction would be when Kirby told him a ma's dying. The plow hit a rock and jolted the boy back to his surroundings, popping his teeth together and wrenching his arms. Kirby unhooked the plow and left the plow sitting in the middle of the field. He was late getting the crops in, but no later than anyone else in the hollows and valleys of this part of Missouri. The rains had come and stayed, making field work impossible. But he had tried to get something up. It was a matter of survival. Kirby jumped on the back of one of the big Missouri Reds, the one called Ange, and kicked the mule into movement. But it really didn't make any difference how much you kicked old Ange, because the mule would trot along at its own pace, oblivious to the thumping heels on its side. But if you kicked too much, old Ange would dump a body on his butt, then stand over you and bray, kind of like mule laughter. Made you feel like a fool. Then you'd have a hell of a time getting back on Ange. Kirby plodded down the turn row on the east side of the field. Dust from the road caught his eyes. One rider pulling up to the house, leading a saddleless, riderless horse, a bay. The boy touched the smooth butt of the Navy 36 stuck behind his wide belt. A man just couldn't be too careful these days, what with some of those Kansas Jayhawkers still around, killing and looting and raping. But he reminded himself that some of the Missouri Redlegs were just as bad as the Jayhawkers. Seems like the war brought out the poison in some and the good in others. Kirby's father hadn't held much with slavery, but he did feel the state had a right to set and uphold its own laws, so he had ridden off to fight with the Gray. His pa's brother, up in Iowa, whom Kirby had not seen but one time in his life, was a farmer, like most of the gents and men. But he had marched off to fight with the Blue. He'd gotten killed, so Kirby had heard, in Chancellorville, back in 63. At 16, Kirby didn't believe a man had the right to keep another in chains as a slave, although there hadn't been much of that in this part of Missouri anyhow. Everybody was too poor, just a day-to-day struggle keeping body and soul together. But he did believe, like his father, and truth be told, probably because of his father, that the government in far-off Washington on the river did not have the right to tell a state what it could and couldn't do in all matters. Didn't seem right. Had Kirby been old enough and not had his ma to look after, he would have ridden for the Gray himself. As Ange plodded closer to the house, Kirby made out the figure in the front yard. It was his father.
Boy, I swear you've grown 2 feet.
Well, you've been gone 4 years, Pa.
Kirby wanted to throw his arms around his pa, but he didn't, because his pa didn't hold with a lot of touching between men. Kirby stuck out his hand, and his pa shook it.
Strong, too.
Thank you, Pa.
Crops is late, Kirby.
Yes, sir. Rain's come and stayed.
Well, I wasn't faulting you, boy. I seen a cross on the hill overlooking the creek. Would that be your ma?
Yes, sir.
When'd she pass?
Spring of last year. Doc Blanchard said it was her lungs and her bad heart.
Did she go hard?
No, sir. Went on in her sleep. Found her the next morning when I brung her coffee and grits.
Good coffee's scarce. What'd you do with the coffee?
Drank it. Then went to get the doc.
Right, nice service.
Folks come from all over to see her off.
Well, I think I'll go up to the hill and sit with your ma for a time. You put up them horses and rub them down. We'll talk over supper.
Emmett's eyes flicked over the 36 stuck behind his son's belt. He said nothing about it.
Pa, glad you're back.
The father stepped forward, put his arms around his son, and held him. Over greens and fried squirrel and pan bread, they ate and talked through the years that they had both lost and gained. There were a few moments of uncomfortable silence between them until they both adjusted to the time and place, but then they were once more father and son.
Well, we done our best. Can't nobody say we didn't. And there ain't nobody got nothing to be ashamed of. I thought it wrong for the Yankees to burn folks' homes like they did. But it was war, and terrible things happen in war. But the Bluebellies just kept on coming. Shoot one, and five would take his place. They weren't near about the riflemen we was, nor the riders, but they whipped us fair and square, and now it's time to put all that behind us and get on with living. You know your brother Luke is dead, don't you?
Yes, sir. I didn't know if you did or not. I heard he was killed in the wilderness last year, fighting with Lee, wasn't he?
Yeah. Trying to get back to the wilderness, so I heard. I don't see no sign of your sister Janie, and you ain't brought up her name. What are you holding back, Kirby?
She run off, Pa. Last year. Run off with a tinker, so he called himself. But he was a gambler, I'd say.
Smooth talker, I'd wager.
Yes, sir.
What his hands look like?
Soft.
Mm-hmm. Gambler, all right. How'd your ma take it?
Hard.
Probably he'll kill her. Well, past is past. Ain't no dwelling on it. I've ridden a nice piece these last weeks. Wanted to get home. Now I'm home, and I'm tired. Reckon you are too, son. We'll get some sleep. Talk in the morning. I got a plan.
The next day, breakfast was meager. Fried mush, coffee that was mostly chicory, and a piece of leftover pan bread.
I don't think it's good to stay here, boy. Too many memories. Lane's got too many rocks to farm. I think it's best for us to pack up, sell what we can, and head west. We'll sell the mules, buy some pack horses. Mules is getting too old for where we're going. What is today, boy?
Wednesday, Pa.
The West. That was the frontier Kirby'd read about in the dime novels. Buffalo and mountain men. But then he sobered, as he realized that also meant Injuns on the warpath.
We'll ride into town today, boy. Ask around some. Kirby, brought that bay out yonder home for you.
Thank you, Pa.
How far you been from this holler, boy?
A good piece, Pa. I went to Springfield once. It took us a good bit of traveling to get there, too.
70 miles. Emmett pushed his rawhide-bottom chair back and looked at his son.
Toward the end of the war, Kirby, some Texicans and some mountain men joined up with us. Them mountain men had been all the way to the Pacific Ocean, but they talked a lot about a place the Shoshone Indians called Idaho, something like that. And I'd like to see it, and all the country between here and there. I've been all the way to the Atlantic Ocean, boy. You never seen so much water. You just got no idea how big this country is. But west is where the people's got to go. I figure we'll just head on out that way, too.
Pa, how will we know when we get to where it is we're going?
Oh, don't worry about that. We'll know.
They pulled out the following Sunday morning, just as the sun was touching the eastern rim of the Ozark Mountains of Missouri. Kirby rode the bay, sitting on a worn-out McClellan saddle. Not the most comfortable saddle ever invented. The saddle had been bought from a down-on-his-luck Confederate soldier trying to get back to Louisiana. In Kirby's saddlebags, in addition to an extra pair of trousers, shirt, long-handle underwear, and two pair of socks, was a worn McGuffey's reader his pa had purchased for a penny, much to Kirby's disgust. He thought he was all done with schooling. The boy had no way of knowing that his education was just beginning. The McGuffey's reader was heavy on his mind.
I can already read and cipher.
I expect you can.
Emmett's eyes lifted, touching the now tiny cross on the faraway knoll. He touched his boot heels to his mount, and father and son headed west.
What's a verb?
Huh? I mean, sir?
The verb, boy. Tell me what it is.
Well, I reckon I forgot. You brung it up, so you tell me.
Don't sass me, boy. I asked you first.
Then I reckon we'll find out together, Pa.
I reckon we will at that, boy.
Emmett turned once, twisting in the saddle to look for the last time at the cross on the knoll. Then he straightened in the saddle, assuming the cavalryman's stiffed back position.
You got any regrets, Kirby? Leaving this place, I mean?
Hard work, not always enough food, Jayhawkers, Yankees, cold winters, and some bad memories. If that's regrets, I'm happy to leave them behind.
You was just a boy when I pulled out with the Grays. I reckon I'd done you and your ma a disservice, like 500,000 other men done their loved ones. I didn't leave you no time for youthful foolishness, no time to be a young boy. You had to be a man at 12. I don't know if I can make up for that, but I aim to try. From now on, son, it'll be you and me.
They rode on, edging slightly northward as they went. They skirted Joplin, a town on the Ozark Plateau. It was a young town, only 25 years old in 1865. Joplin had a few years to go before it would become the metropolis of a three-state lead and zinc field.
Can we ride into Joplin, Pa? The only other big town I ever seen was Springfield.
Oh, boy. All kinds of dens of iniquity there.
What's a den of what'd you say, Pa?
You'll find out soon enough, I reckon.
Why don't you tell me, Pa?
'Cause I ain't of a mind to, that's why.
Sure must be something pretty dang good.
Some folks would say so, I'm sure. Never been to one myself, and don't cuss. It ain't seemly. You might slip and do so around a lady. Ladies don't like cussing.
You say hell's fire, Pa.
That's different.
How come?
Boy, you sure ask a lot of questions. That's worrisome.
Well, how else am I to learn?
I can cuss now and then, 'cause I'm older than you, that's why.
Well, how long will it be before I can cuss, Pa?
Lord have mercy on a poor veteran and give me strength.
They left the cool valleys and hills of Missouri, with its rushing creeks and shade trees, and rode into a hot Kansas summer. Only 4 years into the Union, much of Kansas was unsettled, with almost the entire western half of the territory of the Kiowa and Pawnee, the Kiowa to the south, the Pawnee to the north. The pair rode slowly, the pack horses trailing from lead ropes. The father and son had no deadline to meet and no place in particular to go, or so the boy thought. They crossed through Osage country without encountering any hostile Indians. Not to say they didn't see Indians. Probably a lot more saw them than they realized. But those the father and son spotted were always at a distance, or were not interested in the pair.
They may be hunting. I hear tell Indians is notional folks. Hard for men to understand their way of life. I'm told the same band that might leave us alone today might try to kill us tomorrow.
Why, Pa?
Well, damned if I know, boy.
You cussed again.
I'm older.
Right.
When they reached the Arkansas River later on that afternoon, Emmett pulled them up and made camp early.
We got ample powder and shot and paper cartridges, boy. I figure more than we'll need to get through. According to them I talked with, from here on, it gets mean.
How's that, Pa?
We're heading west and north as we go, like this.
Emmett drew a line in the dirt with a stick.
This will take us, I hope, right between the Kiowa and the Pawnee. The white man's been pushing the Indians hard the past few years, taking land the Indians say belongs to them. The savages is getting right ugly about it, so I'm told.
Who does the land belong to, Pa?
Don't rightly know. Looks to me like it don't really belong to nobody. Way I look at it, and most other white folks, a man's got to do something with the land to make it his. The Indians ain't been doing that, so I'm told. They just roam it, hunt it, fish it, and the like.
But how long have they been doing that, Pa?
I expect forever, boy.
They rode westward, edging north. Several weeks had passed since they rode from the land of Kirby's birth, and already that place was fading from his mind. He'd never been happy there, so he made no real attempt to halt the fading of the images. Kirby didn't know how much his paw had gotten for the land and the equipment and the mules, but he knew he had gotten it in gold, and not much gold. His paw carried the gold in a small leather pouch inside his shirt, secured around his neck with a piece of rawhide. The elder Kirby was heavily armed, a Sharps 52 caliber rifle and a saddle boot, two Remington Army revolvers and holsters around his waist, two more pistols and saddle holsters left and right of the horn, and he carried a gambler's gun behind his belt buckle, a 44 caliber two-shot Derringer. His knife was a wicked-looking razor-sharp Arkansas toothpick in a leather sheath on his left side.
How come them holsters around your waist ain't got no flaps on them, Pa? How come you cut them off that way?
So I can get the pistols out faster, son. This leather thong run through the front loops over the hammer to hold the pistol.
Is getting a gun out fast important, Pa?
Sometimes, boy. But more important is hitting what you're aiming at.
Think I'll do mine that away.
Your choice.
Kirby knew, from hearing talk after Appomattox, that the Gray was supposed to turn in their weapons, but he had a hunch that his father, hearing of the surrender, had just wheeled around and took the long way back to Missouri, his weapons with him, and the devil with surrender terms.
How'd you get that Navy Colt, son?
Bunch of Jayhawkers came riding through one night, heading back to Kansas like the devil was chasing them. Turned out that was just about right. About a half hour later, Bloody Bill Anderson and his boys come riding up. They stopped to rest and water their horses. There was this young fella with them. Couldn't have been no more than a year or so older than me. He seen me and Ma there alone, and all I had was this old rifle.
Kirby patted the worn stock of an old flint and percussion plains rifle in a saddle boot.
So he gave me this Navy gun and an extra cylinder. Seemed like a right nice thing for him to do. He was nice, soft-spoken too.
That was a nice thing to do. You seen him since?
No, sir.
You thank him proper?
Yes, sir. Gave him a bit of food and a sack.
Neighborly. He tell you his name?
Yes, sir. James. Jesse James. His brother Frank was with the bunch, too. Some older than Jesse.
Don't recall hearing that name before.
Jesse blinked his eyes a lot.
Is that right? Well, you remember the name, son. Might run into him again someday. Good man like that's hard to find.
As the days rolled past, the way ever westward, father and son learned more of the wild country into which they rode, ever alert for trouble. And they learned more of each other, too, becoming reacquainted. They saw herds of buffalo that held them spellbound. The size and number and royal bearing of the magnificent animals awe-inspiring. Many times as they rode, father and son came upon the bones of what appeared to be thousands of the animals, callously slaughtered for their hide, hump, and tongue. The rest left a rotten stink under the summer sun.
Them is the Indians' main food supply, and another reason why the savages is mad at the whites. I got to side with the savages about this.
As they skirted the rotten boneyard, coyotes and a few wolves feasted on the tons of meat left behind.
This don't seem right to me.
It ain't. Man should never take no more than he himself can use. This is just pure old waste. Stupid.
And the Indians had nothing to do with this?
Hell no. Look at them shod pony tracks. The Indians don't shoe their ponies and drive wagons that left them tracks over there. The white man did this.
They passed the slaughter, both silent for a time.
Maybe the Indians do have a point about the white man coming here.
Reckon they do, boy. Not much is ever just black and white. Always a middle ground that needs looking at.
Like the war between the states, Pa?
Yeah, right and wrong on both sides there, too.
Was you a hero, Pa?
We all was. Every man that fought on either side. It was a hell of a war.
Was you an officer?
Sergeant.
Why was everybody a hero, Pa?
Because there'll never be, I pray God, another war like that one, boy. Don't know the final count of dead, but it was terrible. I can tell you that. I seen men lay side by side, some on stretchers, some on blankets, some just laying on the cold ground. All of them wounded, a lot of them dying. The line was 5 or 6 deep, and it stretched for more than 3 miles along the railroad track. You just can't imagine that, boy. Not until you see it with your own eyes. Maybe one doctor for every 500 men. No medicine, no food, no nothing. Men crying out for just a touch of a woman's hand before they died. Toward the end of the war, there wasn't even no hope. We knew we was beat, but still, we fought on like crazy men.
Why, Pa?
Ask 100 men, boy, and they'll give you 100 different answers. There were some men that fought because they really hated the Negroes. Some fought because they was losing a way of life that was all they'd ever known. Some didn't fight at all till they seen the Yankees coming through, burning and looting and robbing and raping. Some of them did that too, boy. Don't never let anybody tell you no different. I ain't saying the Gray didn't have its share of scallywags with white trash, because we did. But nothing to compare with the Yankees.
Maybe that had something to do with the fact that the Blues had more men, Pa.
Maybe so, son.
They rode on, across the seemingly endless plains of tall grass and sudden breaks in the earth, cleverly disguised by nature. A pile of rocks, not arranged by nature, came into view soon. Kirby pointed them out.
That's what I've been looking for. That's a sign telling travelers that this here is the Santa Fe Trail. North and west of here will be Fort Larned. North of that will be the Pawnee Rock.
What's that, Pa?
That's a landmark is what it is.
Before Kirby could blink, his paw had wheeled his roan and had a pistol in his hand, hammer back. It was the fastest draw Kirby had ever seen. Not that he had seen that many. Just the time the town marshal back in Missouri had tried a fast draw and shot himself in the foot.
Whoa! You some swift pilgrim?
I ain't no pilgrim.
Yeah, I reckon you ain't at that.
Kirby had wheeled his bay and now sat his saddle, staring at the dirtiest man he had ever seen. The man was dressed entirely in buckskin, from the moccasins on his feet to his wide-brimmed leather hat. A white tobacco-stained beard covered his face. His nose was red, and his eyes twinkled with mischief. He looked a little like a skinny, dirty version of Santa Claus. He sat on a funny spotted pony, two pack animals with him.
Where'd you come from?
I've been watching you two pilgrims from that ravine yonder. Y'all don't know much about traveling in Indian country, do you? Best stay off the ridges now. You two been standing out like a third titty.
The man shifted his gaze to Kirby.
What you staring at, boy?
Be darned if I rightly know.
You got sand in your bottom, all right.
That's my son.
I'll trade for him. Injun pays right smart for a strong boy like him.
My son is not for trade, old-timer.
I'll tell you what. I won't call you pilgrim. You don't call me old-timer. Deal?
Emmett lowered his pistol, returning it to leather.
Deal.
Are you pilgrim? You folks know where you are?
West of the state of Missouri, east of the Pacific Ocean.
Uh-huh. In other words, you lost as a lizard.
Back south of us is a trading post and a few cabins some folks begun calling Wichita. You heard me say where Fort Larned was.
Mm-hmm. Maybe you ain't lost. You two got names?
I'm Emmett. This is my son, Kirby.
Pleasure. I'm called Preacher. Don't you scoff, boy. Ain't nice to scoff at a man's name. If I wasn't a gentle type man, I might let the hairs on my neck get stiff.
Preacher can't be your real name.
Well, no, you're right. But I've been called that for so long I nearabouts forgot my Christian name. So Preacher it'll be. It's that or nothing.
You one left all them dead buffalo we seen way back?
I might have shot one or two of them. Maybe so, maybe not.
Seems like a waste to me.
Yeah, it did to me too.
That mean you ain't gonna kill no more?
I didn't say that now, did I?
We'll be riding on now, Preacher. Maybe we'll see you again.
Preacher's eyes had shifted to the northwest, then they narrowed, his lips tightening.
Yep, I reckon you will.
Emmett wheeled his horse and pointed its nose west-northwest. Kirby reluctantly followed. He would have liked to have stayed and talked with the old man.
Pa, that old man was so dirty, he smelled.
Mountain man. He's a ways from home base, I'm figuring. Trying to get back. Cantankerous old boys. Some of them mean as snakes. I think they get together once a year and bathe.
But you said you soldiered with some mountain men.
Did. But they got out in time before the high lonesome got to them.
I don't understand.
They stay up in the high country for years. Don't do nothing but trap and such. Maybe they won't see a white man once every 2 years, except maybe another mountain man. Sometimes, when they do meet, they don't speak. All they got is their horses and guns and the whistling wind and the silence of the mountains. They're alone. It does something to them. They get notional, funny acting.
You mean they go crazy?
In a way, I'm thinking. I don't know much about them. Nobody does, I reckon. But I think maybe they didn't much like people to begin with. They craved the lonesomeness of space. The mountain men I was with now, it was some different. They told me about that old man's kind. They're brave men, son. Don't ever doubt that. Probably the bravest men in the world. Got to be to live like they do. And what they've done will contribute to this country. now that we fought the war and can put the nation back together.
That's a real pretty speech, Pa.
Emmett reddened around the neck.
What's contribute?
It means they done good.
Pa?
Son?
That old man is following us. He shucked his rifle out his boot.
Preacher galloped up to the pair, his rifle in his hand.
Don't get nervous. It ain't me you gotta fear. We're fixing to get ambushed shortly. This here country is famous for that.
Ambushed by who?
Kiowa, I think. But they could be Pawnee. My eyes ain't as sharp as they used to be. I seen one of them stick a head up out of a wash over yonder while I was jawing with you. He's young or he wouldn't have done that. But that don't mean the others with him is young.
How many?
I don't know. In this country, one's too many. Do know this, though. We better light a shuck out of here. If memory serves me correct, right over yonder, over that ridge, there's a little creek behind a stand of cottonwoods with an old buffalo wallow in front of it.
Preacher looked up, stood up in his stirrups, and cocked his shaggy head.
Here they come, boys! Rake them cayuses! Hyah!
With the mountain man taking the lead, the three of them rode for the crest of the ridge. The pack horses seemed to sense the urgency, for they followed with no pullback on the ropes. Cresting the ridge, the riders slid down the incline and galloped into the timber, down into the wallow. Preacher might well have been past his so-called good years, but the mountain man leaped off his spotted pony, rifle in hand, and got in position. Preacher, like Emmett, carried a sharp .52, firing a paper cartridge, deadly at 700 yards or more. Kirby looked up in time to see a brave fly off his pony, a crimson slash on his naked chest.
Give me that Spencer out of the pack, boy.
The what?
The rifle. It's in the pack. The tin box wrapped up with it. Bring both of them. Cut the ropes, boy.
Slashing the ropes with his long-bladed knife, Kirby grabbed the long canvas-wrapped rifle and the tin box. He ran to his father's side. He stood and watched as his father got a buck in the sights of his sharps. The buck slammed off his pony, bounced off the ground, and leaped to his feet, one arm hanging bloody and broken. The engine dodged for cover. He didn't make it.
Nice shot, Preacher.
Emmett laid the sharps aside and hurriedly unwrapped the canvas, exposing an ugly weapon. Pot-bellied, slab-sided receiver. Emmett glanced up at Preacher and was grinning at him.
What the hell are you grinning about, man?
I just wanted to see what you had all wrapped up, partner. Figured I had you beat with what's in my pack.
We'll see.
Emmett pulled out a thin tube from the tin box and inserted it in the butt plate, chambering around. In the tin box were a dozen or more tubes, each containing several rounds, .52 caliber. Emmett leveled the rifle. Emmett's firing had not dropped a single brave, but the engines did scatter for cover, disappearing, horses and all, behind a ridge.
Scared them. They ain't used to repeaters. All they know is single shots. Let me get something out of my pack. I'll show you a thing or two.
Preacher went to one of his pack animals, untied one of the side packs, and let it fall to the ground. He pulled out the most beautiful rifle Kirby had ever seen.
Damn! The Bluebellies had some of those toward the end of the war, but I never could get my hands on one.
Preacher smiled and pulled another Henry repeating rifle from his pack. Unpredictable as mountain men usually were, he tossed the second Henry to Emmett, along with a sack of cartridges.
Now we be friends.
I'll pay you for this.
No, it ain't necessary. I won both of them in a contest outside Westport Landing, Kansas City to you. Besides, somebody got to look out for the two of you. Y'all liable to wander out here and get hurt. Appears to me don't neither of you know tit from tat about staying alive in Injun country.
You might be right. So, thank you kindly.
Boy, you healed, so you gonna get in this fight or not?
Sir?
Healed means you're carrying a gun. That makes you man. Ain't you got no rifle except that muzzle loader?
No, sir.
Now take your daddy's sharps in. You seen him loaded, you know how to do it. Take that tin box of tubes, too, and you watch out for our backs. Them Pawnee, and they is Pawnees, likely to come across that creek. You in wild country, boy. You may as well get bloodied.
Do it, Kirby. Now watch yourself. Don't hesitate a second to shoot. Those savages won't show you any mercy, so you do the same to them.
Kirby, a little pale around the mouth, took up the heavy sharps and the bottle of tubes, reloaded the rifle, and made himself as comfortable as possible on the rear slope of the slight incline overlooking the creek.
Not there, boy. Your back is open to the front of the line. Get behind that tree twixt you and us. That way, you won't catch no lead or an arrow in your back.
The boy did as he was told, feeling a bit foolish that he had not thought about his back. Hadn't he read enough dime novels to know that? He chastised himself. Nervous sweat dripped from his forehead as he waited, and he had to go to the bathroom, just something awful. A half hour passed, the only action, the always moving Kansas winds chasing tumbleweeds, the southward moving waters of the creek, and an occasional leap of a fish.
What are they waiting for?
For us to get careless? Now don't you fret none, they're still out there. I've been living in and around Injun country for the better part of 50 years. I know them better, well, at least as good as any living white man. They'll try to wait us out. They got nothing but time, boys.
No way we can talk to them?
Oh, why, sure, Emmett. You just stand up, put your hands in the air, and tell them you want to palaver some. They'll probably let you walk right up to them. Odds are, they'll even let you speak your piece. Oh, they're polite like that. White man can ride right up into nearabouts any Injun village. Hell, they'll feed you, sign talk to you, give you a place to sleep. Of course, now, getting out is the problem. See, they ain't like us, Emmett. They don't come close to thinking like us at all. What's fun to them is to torture us. They call it testing a man's bravery. If a man dies good, that is, he don't holler a lot, they make it last as long as possible. Then they'll sing songs about you, praise you for dying good. Lots of white folks condemn them for that, but it's just their way of life, you know. They got all sorts of ways to test a man's bravery and strength. Now they might, depending on the tribe, strip you, stake you out over a big anthill, then pour honey on you. Then they'll squat back and watch, see how well you die. Or they might bury you up to your neck in the ground and slit your eyelid so you can't close them and let the sun blind you. Then after your eyes is burnt blind, they'll dig you up and turn you loose naked out in the wild. And they'll trail you for days, seeing how well you die.
Kirby positioned himself better behind the tree and quietly went to the bathroom. If a bean is a bean, the boy thought, then what's a pea? It's a relief.
Out in the deserts now, them Indians get downright mean with the fun. They'll cut out your eyes and cut off your privates and slit the tendons in your ankles so you can't do nothing but flop around on the sand. Oh yeah, they get a big laugh out of that. Or they might hang you upside down over a little fire. Apaches like to see hair burn, see? Hey, a little strange about that. Or now, if they like you, they might put you through what they call the run of the era. I lived through that once, but I was some younger then. Damn if and I'd want to do it again at my age. You want me to tell you about that little game?
No, I get your point.
Yeah, I figured you would. A point is, don't let them ever take you alive. A Kirby now, they'd probably keep him for work or trade. But that's chancy. He being near about a grown man. Look alive, boys. Stay that way. Here they come.
How do you know that, preacher? I don't see anything.
The wind just shifted. I smelled them. They close now. They've been easing up through the grass. Get ready.
Kirby wondered how the old man could smell anything over the fumes from his own body. Emmett, a veteran of 4 years of continuous war, could not believe an enemy could slip up on him in open daylight. When Preacher jacked back the hammer of his Henry 44, Emmett shifted his eyes from his perimeter for just a second. When he looked back again at his field of fire, a big painted buck was almost on top of him. Preacher looked at Kirby, who was looking at him, his mouth hanging open in shock, fear, and confusion.
Don't look at me, boy. Keep them eyes in front of you.
Kirby jerked his gaze to the small creek and the stand of timber that lay behind him. His eyes were beginning to smart from the acrid powder smoke. His head was aching, pounding with the Henry 44, screaming and yelling. The Spencer that Kirby held at the ready was a heavy weapon, and his arms were beginning to ache from the strain. His head suddenly came up, eyes alert. and seen movement on the far side of the creek. Someone or something was over there. Kirby couldn't understand why they couldn't be friends with these people. And that thought was still throbbing in his brain when a young Injun suddenly sprang from the willows by the creek and lunged into the water with a rifle in his hand. For what seemed like an eternity, Kirby watched the young brave, a boy about his own age, leap and thrash through the water. Kirby jacked back the hammer and the Spencer and sighted in on the brave. When the smoke blew away, the young Injun was face down in the water, his blood staining the stream. Kirby stared at what he'd done, then fought back waves of sickness that threatened to spill from his stomach. Suddenly, his father was locked in hand-to-hand combat with two knife-wielding braves. Too close for the rifle, Kirby clawed his Navy Colt from leather, vowing he would cut that stupid flap from his holster after this was over. Kirby took out one brave. Kirby's father buried his Arkansas toothpick to the hilt in the chest of the other. Then, as abruptly as they came, the Indians were gone, dragging as many of their dead and wounded with them as they could. Two braves lay dead in front of Preacher. Two braves lay dead in the shallow ravine with the three men. The boy Kirby had shot lay in the creek, arms outstretched, the water a deep crimson. The body slowly floated downstream. Preacher looked at the dead buck in the creek, then at the brave in the wallow with him, the one Kirby had shot. He lifted his eyes to the boy.
You got your baptism this day, boy. Did right well, you did.
Saved my life, son. Can't call you boy no more, I reckon. You be a man now.
A thin finger of smoke lifted from the barrel of the Navy 36 that Kirby held in his hand. Preacher smiled.
Yep. Smoke will suit you just fine. So smoke it'll be.
Sir?
Smoke. That's what I'm gonna call you from now on. Smoke.
Preacher hopped out of the wallow and walked to a dead buck. He bent down and removed something from the dead engine's belt, Navy 36. He tossed the pistol to Kirby, along with the sack of shot and powder.
Here, Smoke. Now you got two of them.
Kirby felt more than a little foolish with his new nickname. He didn't feel at all like a man called Smoke should feel. Tough and brave and gallant and all that. But truth be told, he did secretly like his new name. Off another dead engine, Preacher took a long bladed knife and a bead-adorned sheath. He tossed that to Kirby, too.
Man's gotta have a good knife, too.
Then, he pulled his own knife and began scalping the dead bucks.
Good God, man, what in the hell are you doing?
Taking hair. I know a trading post that pays a dollar for every scalp lock a man can bring in. 50 cents for a squaw's hair. But I don't hold with scalping women. I won't do this to a ute or a crow. I mean, I've lived with them. But I just purely can't abide a Pawnee.
Emmett grimaced at the bloody side, but he kept his mouth shut. He had heard that Indians had not been the originators of scalping. It was the white man. Now he believed the story. Kirby looked on as Preacher took the Injun's hair. He was both horrified and fascinated at the same time. Neither Emmett nor his son had ever seen a warlike Injun. There had been a few down at the hills Quapaw Injuns in Missouri when Emmett was growing up, and there were still a few around, but they were not warlike. Father and son moved closer to take a look at their recent enemy. Preacher had finished his grisly work. Surprisingly, to Kirby at least, there was little blood from the close haircut.
They don't look so mean to me. Not now, anyways. They just look kind of poor.
Oh, they ain't poor. Don't you believe that for a second. Hell, most of the time they eat right well. Buffalo steak, that's near about the best meat in the world, I reckon. And pemmican? Oh, will you ever get a chance to eat some pemmican, you see what I mean about that. I mean, tasty. Injun goes hungry. That's his own damn fault. They won't grow no gardens. They think that's beneath them. Warriors and hunters, not farmers. So to hell with them.
Do you grow a garden, Preacher?
I've been known to from time to time, but I ain't no goddamn sod buster, if that's what you mean.
See, Pa, he can cuss. Why can't I?
Hush up, Kirby.
What's that about cussing?
Never mind.
Kirby was growing accustomed to the dead braves. It didn't bother him much now. His stomach had ceased its growling.
What'd you call that food? What?
Pemmican. Buffalo meat, usually. Injuns cut it into strips and dry it. That's called jerky. And then they take the jerky and crumble it. They beat the hell out of it. Then they mix it with fleece.
With what?
Fat. Boiling fat. Then you drop in a few berries, make it up in a brick, and wrap it. Best eating you ever put in your mouth. I mean, it don't spoil. It lasts for months. Yeah, it sure do.
Preacher put his bloody scalps into a pouch on his wide belt and closed the flap.
Won't that stink?
Yeah, they do get right ripe.
Do we bury these Injuns?
Oh, hell no. Plains Injuns don't plant the dead like we do. Besides, they'll be back for them. Don't you fret about that. Right now, I expect we better get from here. Put some country twixt us and them live Injuns. Come on, let's go.
The trio rode at a steady gallop for several miles, then walked their horses, resting them as best they could. They repeated this several times, putting miles between them and the battle site by the creek. Late afternoon, they pulled up by a tiny stream and made a short camp.
Hey, we'll make a small fire. Use them dry buffalo chips we picked up. They don't hardly make no smoke, see? We'll have us coffee and beans and then douse the fire and make camp about 2-3 miles from here. Place I remember. We'll post guards this night too, boys, and every night from here on in. This is hostile country smoke.
Kirby guessed it was going to be smoke for the rest of his life, or at least until Preacher left him. He looked at his paw. Emmett was smiling. Kirby said nothing until the fire was glowing faintly and the coffee boiling. The beans cooked. He sliced bacon into a blackened skillet, then looked at Preacher.
Why smoke, Preacher?
All famous men gotta have good sound and nicknames. Smoke sounds good to me. And believe me, Smoke, I have known some right famous men in my time.
I'm not famous.
Uh-huh. But you will be, I'm thinking.
They ate an early supper, then doused the fire, carefully checking for any live coals that might touch off a prairie fire, something as feared as any engine attack. For a racing fire could outrun a galloping horse. They moved on, riding for an hour before pulling into a small stand of timber to make camp. Preacher spread his blankets, using his saddle for a pillow, and promptly closed his eyes.
I'll stay in the first watch, Smoke. Then wake Preacher for the second, and you can take the last watch from 2 till daylight. Best you go on to sleep now, you'll need it.
Just as Kirby was drifting off to sleep, Emmett spoke again.
If you don't like that nickname, son, we can change it.
It's all right, Pa. Pa, I kind of like Preacher.
So do I, son.
That makes you both good judges of character. Now why don't you two quit all that jawing and let an old man get some rest?
Night, Pa. Preacher.
Night, Smoke.
Night, Smoke.
Preacher rolled the boy out of his blankets at 2 a.m. into the summer coolness on the plains. The night was hung with the brilliance of a million stars.
Stay sharp now, Smoke. Injuns don't usually attack at night. It's bad medicine for them. Brave gets killed at night, his spirit wanders forever. Don't ever get to the hereafter in peace. But Injuns is notional, and not all tribes believe the same things. You never can tell what they're going to do. More than likely, if they're out there, they'll hit us at first light, but you don't never know for sure.
The boy poured a tin cup full of scalding hot coffee, strong enough to support a horseshoe, then replaced the pot on the rock grate. Preacher had showed him how to build the fire, surrounded by rocks, larger rocks in the center to support a pan or pot, the fire hot, but no bigger than a hand. The air opening lay at the rear, facing the camp. The fire was fueled by buffalo chips, hot and smokeless, and the fire couldn't be seen from 10 feet away. While there was still light, Kirby, he could not bring himself to think of himself as Smoke yet, had carefully cleaned and oiled the Navy Colt taken from the dead engine. He'd cut the flap off his holster and punched a hole in the front of the leather, threading a piece of rawhide through the hole, the loop to be placed over the hammer, securing the weapon. He did the same to a holster Preacher gave him for his second weapon. Then, using a wide belt, also given him by Preacher, from his seemingly never-emptying packs, he buckled on his twin 36s. The right-hand pistol he wore butt back. The left-hand pistol he carried butt forward, slightly higher than the other pistol. He carried the big-bladed Bowie knife in its bead-adorned sheath just behind the left-hand Colt. Now, he had no way of knowing at this juncture of his young life, but with that action involving the pistols, and with what would follow in only a matter of hours, he was taking the first steps toward creating a legend that would endure as long as riders would ride of the West. Men would fear and respect him. Women would desire him. But only one would ever find herself truly loved by him. Children would play games, imitating the man called Smoke. And songs would be written and sung about him, both in the Injun villages and in the white man's saloons. But on this pleasant night, Kirby was still some years away from being a living legend. He was just a slightly frightened young man, just a few months into his 16th year, sitting in the middle of a vast open plain, watching for savage Injuns, and hoping to God that none were within a couple thousand miles of him. Kirby almost dozed off, but he caught himself and jerked back awake. He bent forward to pour another cup of coffee, rubbing his sleepy eyes as he did so. A quivering arrow drove into the tree where Kirby just a second before had been resting. Although Kirby had not yet practiced his gun moves, he'd carefully gone over them in his mind. Two Pawnee Braves went down in lifeless heaps. Kirby shifted position. Two more bucks were cut down by the 36 caliber balls. The Injuns wanted no more of this camp. They had lost too many Braves already. There was too much death here. Preacher was impressed, to say the least.
Good God, I ain't never seen nothing like this. I know Jim Bridger, Kit Carson, Broken Hand Fitzpatrick, shit, Uncle Dick Wooten, Rattlesnake Williams, and I'm talking about 100 other salty old boys. But I ain't never seen nothing to top this here. Smoke, you may be a youngster in years, but you'll damn sure do to ride the river with.
Kirby didn't know it yet, but that was the highest compliment a mountain man could give another man.
Thank you.
Preacher scalped the Pawnee, then tossed the bloody scalp locks to Kirby.
A yarn, Smoke. Put them in that war bag I give you. They're worth $4 to you. Go on now. $4 ain't nothing to sneeze at.
With his father watching through eyes that had seen much, Kirby picked up the bloody hair and placed them in a beaded pouch Preacher had given him. Emmett, who had ridden with the great Confederate Ranger J.S. Mosby for a year, was the furthest from being a stranger to guns and gunplay. Although Kirby would not learn of it for years, his father had been with Mosby when they rode into the middle of a Union Army camp at Fairfax, Virginia one night. They had asked their way to headquarters, and there Mosby awakened the Yankee general, Stoughton, by rudely and ungentlemanly slapping the man on his butt.
Have you ever heard of a J.S. Mosby?
Of course. Have you captured him?
No, sir. He's captured you.
The Confederate Rangers then kidnapped the Union general right from under the noses of the general's own men.
You're smooth and quick, and I have seen some men who were smooth and quick.
Thank you, Pa.
Kirby was just a little bit sick, and he was embarrassed by what he'd done and all the attention he was receiving. The scalp locks in his war bag were not helping his stomach any either.
Be careful how you use your newfound talent, son. Use it for good, not for evil. Temper your talent.
Yes, Pa, I will.
Preacher looked at the boy and wondered. The trio rode for several days without encountering any more hostiles. They saw Smoke often, and they knew they were being watched and discussed, but they rode through without further incident from the Pawnee. Three of them had killed more than 12 Pawnee, wounding several more in two quick fights. The Indians may have been savage to the white man's way of reasoning, but he was not a fool, and he was a first-class fighting man. Many of the tribes harboring the greatest guerrilla fighters the world would ever know. Part of that's knowing when to fight and when to back off. And this, well, this was definitely one of the back-off times for the Pawnee.
This here's a Cimarron cutoff, the southern route to Santa Fe. Better for wagons and women, but the water's scarce. The northern route is best for water and graze, but man, it's tough. Oh, Lord, it's tough.
Why?
Mountains, Rocky Mountains. Make them mountains where I was born look like pimples.
Where's that, preacher?
Oh, East Ohio, long time ago. I run off when I was 12. That were, let's see, best I can recall, that were 52 years ago. 1813, I believe it was. I spent the better part of 50 years in the mountains. And I reckon I've known every mountain man worth his salt in that time. And some that thought they was tough but wasn't.
What happened to them that wasn't?
I helped bury some of them.
You must know your way around this country, then.
Yeah, do that for a fact. I helped open up this here Santa Fe Trail, and I've ridden the Mormon Trail more than once, boys. You know, I've been up in the mountains, over the hill, and across the river, and I've seen the creature. But Smoke, I swear I ain't never seen the likes of you when it comes to handling a shotgun. It's like you were born with a Colt in your hands. It's unnatural.
The old mountain man was silent for a time, his eyes on the deep ruts in the ground that signified the Santa Fe Trail.
Now, I don't know where you two is going. Probably you don't either. You may just be a-wandering, and that's all. And that's dandy. That's dandy. Good for folk to see the country. But I'm gonna tag along here and there and catch up every now and then and see how you're making it. I usually don't much take to folk. I like to be alone. It's probably a sign of my advanced age, my kind of taking a liking to you two, especially Smoke there. But I got a feeling about him. He's gonna make a name for himself. I want to see that. I want to be there when he do.
We're heading in a roundabout way to a place called Idaho.
Oh, yeah. That's rugged and beautiful. Been there lots of times. But were I you, and of course I ain't, but if I were, I'd see Colorado first. I'll tell you what. I got me a cache of fur not too far from here. Last year's trapping. Y'all mosey around, take it easy, keep on heading northwest. From here, more north than west, and y'all will cut the northern trail of the Santa Fe in a few days. Now you stay with it till you come to the ruins of Bent's Fort, and I'll meet you there. See ya.
Preacher wheeled his horse and rode off without looking back, pack horses in tow. Emmett looked at his son. He figured his mission could wait. The men he hunted would still be there in a while. For now, he wanted to spend some time with his son.
How about it, Kirby? Smoke? You want to see Colorado?
Sure, Pa.
Long before 1865, Bent's Fort lay in ruins. But from 1834 to 1850, that post ruled the fur trade in the Southern Rockies. By 1865, the mountain men were almost no more. Time had caught up with them, and in most cases, it had passed them by, too. Civilization had raised its sometimes dubious head and pushed the mountain men into history. Those that remained were men, for the most part, advanced in years for their time, heading for the sunset of their lives. But they were still a rough breed, tough and salty, and not to be taken lightly or talked down to. For these men had spent their youth, hell, their best years, and the midpoint of their lives, too, in the elements, where one careless move could have meant either sudden death or slow torture from hostiles. Mountain men were not easily impressed. But this gathering of mountain men stood and watched as Kirby and his father rode slowly into the ruins of the old post, rifles across their saddles, pack animals trailing. Kirby and his father didn't know Preacher had spread the word about the boy called Smoke already. Kirby, as did many boys of that hard era, looked older than his years. His face was deeply tanned, and he was raw-boned, just beginning to fill out for his adult life. His shoulders and arms were lean but hard with muscle, and they would grow much harder and powerful in the months ahead.
You don't look like much to me.
Neither did Kit. Weren't but 4 inches over 5 feet, but he were a hell of a man.
Well, that he were. That boy there's got a funny way of wearing a brace of shotguns.
Faster than a snake, Preacher says.
Yeah, well, Preacher's been known to tell a lie every now and then.
Not this time, I wager. That there kid's got a mean look to his eyes. Maybe he don't know it yet, but he do. You give him 2-3 years, I think long and hard for tangling with him.
Hell's fire, Calico. You fed a grizzly once.
One, too. But I'm thinking that kid's part bear, part puma, and part rattler. I'll go along with Preacher on this one.
He does have a certain set to that squared-off jaw, don't he?
Yep. Big hands on him, too.
Kirby and Emmett sat their horses and stared. Neither had ever seen anything like this colorful assemblage. There were just a few squaw here and there in attendance, and they stayed to themselves. The men, all of them 60-plus in years, were dressed in wild, bright colors, in buckskin breeches and shirt, with beaded leggings, wide red or blue or yellow sashes about their waists. Some wore whipcord trousers with silk shirts shining in a cacophony of colors. All were beaded and booted and bearded. Some held long muzzle-loading Kentucky rifles or Plains rifles with colorfully dyed rawhide dangling from the barrel, the shot and powder bags decorated with beads. This was to be the last great gathering of the magnificent breed called Mountain Men. Many of them, after this final rendezvous in the twilight of their years, would drift back into the great mountains they loved, never to be heard from or seen again. To die as they'd lived, alone, their graves, the earth they explored, their monuments, the mountains they loved, tombstones rearing above them forever. They were a breed of man that flourished but briefly, whose courage and light helped to open the way west. When Emmett and Kirby spotted Preacher, they could not believe their eyes. He was clean. His beard was trimmed. He wore new buckskins, new leggings, a red sash around his waist, and a light they had never seen sparkled from his eyes.
Howdy! Yo, light and sit, boys.
I don't believe it. His face is clean.
There's water to wash in over there. Good strong soap, too. But you best dump what's in the barrel first. It got fleas in with the ticks.
When Emmett and Son walked out into the final rendezvous with the mountain men on this, their first day at the old post, they were greeted warmly, if with a bit of constraint. A one-eyed, grizzled old man strode up to the pair.
Gonna have us a feast. Come on. Got buffalo hump, antelope, and puma. Preacher's gonna give up the message. Let's don't be late.
Puma?
Mountain lion. Best, sweetest meat you ever did taste. This is the first big rendezvous I've been to in more than 20 years. I guess this will be the last one for many of us.
Why?
Well, fur trade's damn near gone. Pilgrims pouring in over the trails me and all the others opened up. I hate to see it. Well, I've seen 5 white people just last month. 5! It's getting so a body can't even be alone no more.
When was your last rendezvous?
Let me ponder on that. Oh, back about 40, I reckon.
But this is 1865.
It is? Well, damn me. Time sure do get away from a body, don't it?
There'll be many more people behind us.
Yeah, I reckon there will be. Be a plumb ruination to the country, too.
The man shook his head and walked away to join a small group of aging mountain men gathered around several smoking pits just outside of what was left of the fort. The fort, built in a sheltered bend of the Arkansas River, had been for years a welcome sight to trappers, traders, and the few travelers, representing a bit of safe haven for man and horse. Sad, Kirby thought, his eyes taking in all the sights and sounds and good smells of cooking. It's sad. These men opened up this country. Now they're old. Nobody wants them around. And that just did not seem right nor fair to the tall young man. As if on silent cue, the men gathered in a circle. Preacher walked to the center of that circle.
Well, boys, I reckon this here rendezvous's about gonna do it for most of us. Our time has passed. Gotta move over, make way for civilized folks.
ranches and farms and plows and wires and pilgrims and the like, but boys, we can always remember this. We saw it first. We saw it when it was glory, untouched. We rode the mountains and the rivers. We made the trails for the pilgrim to follow. And we buried our friends when we could find enough of them to bury. Some of us was the first white man an eagle or bear or Injun ever seen. Now it's near about time for some of us to see the elephant. But that's got to be all right. We done, I believe, what we was put on this here earth to do, and we can all be right proud we done it. Streams trapped out pert near, fools coming in killing all the buffalo now. In some parts they stringing wire all over God's creation, hemming us in.
Preacher slowly turned, his eyes touching the gaze of all present.
But where can we go? We never marry nobody excepting squaws. We got no white kin to go back to. Hell, even if we did, they wouldn't have us. Can you see us living in the town, all cooped up like a wild animal? No, sir. Not me, no how. Not for none of you, I'm thinking. For me, I'm gonna see to it that this here boy Smoke learns the true way of the wilderness. It might take me a while, him being no more than a child, but I reckon he's as old as we was when we come out here, green as a gourd and wet behind the ears. And when that's done, I'm gonna fork my horses and ride out to see this here much talked about elephant. But before that happens, we all gonna eat, we all gonna tell lies to one another, and we gonna whoop, and we're gonna holler, and we're gonna dance. Then we just gonna ride out without looking back. 'Cause boys, it's all over for men like us. And for some of us, real soon like, we got just one more trail to ride.
Kirby looked around him and saw tears in some of the eyes of the mountain men. For they knew the words they were hearing were true.
Now, boys, bow your blasphemous old heads, because I'm going to talk to the Lord before we feast. Oh, Lord, thank you for this grub we about to partake of. We'll enjoy it, I am sure, because them smells is starting to make my mouth salivate already. But before we start a-gumming and a-gnawing on this sweet meat, there's something I got to ask you. You ever think you maybe made a mistake in the way you set a man to go down its final trail? Now, give it some thought, Lord. I mean, here we are, old men past our prime, juices all dried up. Couldn't do nothing with a woman except think about it. Hell, some of us forgot what it was we were even supposed to think about. But, now here's the important part, Lord. We're still smelling all the good smells of cooking. You see, now, the point I'm making, Lord, if you ever want to do it again, do this. When a man gets our age, why don't you go ahead and take his balls and give him back his teeth? Amen.
Amen.
Let's eat.
Two days later, when Kirby awakened to dawn and kicked off his blankets, a curious silence surrounded him, a feeling of aloneness. Pulling on pants and boots over his long handles, he looked around the ruins of the old post. Nothing. The mountain men were gone, having pulled out as silently as they had learned to live. Kirby shook his father awake and told him what had happened. Getting to his feet, his father pointed.
Look over there.
They saw a preacher standing on the banks of the Arkansas, his face to the high mountains.
What's he doing, Pa?
Saying goodbye, Kirby, in his own way. That old man likes you, son. Listen to him, and he'll teach you things you'll need to stay alive in this country.
The son met the father's eyes.
I will, Pa.